Paper 25, section 4, which is old single column, page 279. Okay, let's take a moment to breathe after last week's session.
It was a doozy.
In that regard, when you think about the fourth epical revelation and the fact that the core of the manifestation of the faith of Jesus can be summed up in two words, love and service. And Jesus made a distinct effort to try to get forward in the consciousness of mankind a contrast to the old volcano God, basically, you know, God the Almighty sort of concept. I mean, yes, there is a God the Almighty, but it's not what people should be immediately thinking of as God. He said, God is love. You know, he tried to definitively stress that, that God is your spiritual father and that God is love. Because your free will relationship, consecration to that God of love, God the Father, the initiator, is what initiates you. In your relationship to the cosmos. So, and that is very definitively the fourth epical revelation. God is love. And when you go to the fifth epical revelation, they pick up on that theme. I mean, they very, very definitively clarify and strengthen that revelation that God is love. But the reason, primarily, that they do that clarification and strengthening is not just to augment the fourth epical revelation. It's so that you have the proper quantity and quality of relationship to that fact that God is love, to open the other eye and bring in the other half of the picture. Because just as much as God is love, God is law. And in order to engage the cosmic truths of the fifth epical revelation, you have to equally have those two facts in view. One with each eye, one with your spiritual consciousness, one with your material consciousness. And then let the nature of mind, which is unity, bring those together into a three-dimensional harmony. Now let that stereoscopic picture form in your mind. And so what we did last week with the Universal Conciliators in this regard was about as definitive an attention step along this line as they could think of putting forward. And what exactly was that attention step? As those of you who are here remember, you could sum it up with something pretty strong like, the wages of sin is death. I mean, it's one, sort of, you want to take it personally, what we were talking about. It really definitively made sure that you heard that message. There's law. How did it end up when they were summing up their description of the Universal Conciliators? They described them as the embodiment of the supreme justice of time and space. Period. End of story. Yeah. Embodiment. That's but they are. Like God is love, they are the embodiment of the supreme justice of time and space. Okay. That other side of the picture. So before we go in to this next section, let's drop back to paper 10. And the reason I'm giving you the reference is so you can kind of maybe keep a thumb on it. You can flip back to it and refer to it. And back there in the Paradise Trinity paper, section 6, which is on old single column page 114. Paper 10, section 6, that first little paragraph. Okay. Okay, so, like I said, on the one hand, we have God is love. What's the other half of the story? Well, they lay out the framework here in this paragraph. All law takes origin in the first source and center. He is law. The italicized, just like they say, God is love. Yeah. Now, before we read any of the rest of it, just notice how they started you off. It didn't say all law takes origin in the universal Father. He is law. Very purposely. Allow there to be that contrast. There's the first source and center, the first source and the first center, those two facets of the Father. And then there's the universal Father facet of God the Father. And most directly, you think of that that loving facet as being the universal Father facet. Universal Father is, quote-unquote, the God of love, with a little more technical specificity. Okay. That's really kind of the personality face, that facet of Father. Behind that, remember, the foundation behind that love is the first source and center, who is law. Love is built upon a foundation of law. And in the sense of the nature of the full six facets of God the Father, the more fundamental, and if you look at it from the bottom up, the more transcendent facet is the law, is the first source and center. Okay. Okay, see, so that they very purposely do it that way. And then they keep in parallel with that. So the first source and center is law. And they say the administration of spiritual law inheres in the second source and center. Remember when we started with love and we worked through the three persons? We went from love to mercy to ministry. And see, they're doing the same thing with the other side here, working out. Okay, so there's the second source and center, and then through the second source and center, you get to the third. The revelation of law, the promulgation and interpretation of the divine statutes, is the function of the third source and center. So, the key words to remember as we go into the next section, promulgation and interpretation. Remember those two words, or flip back, like I said, hold your thumb in the spot and flip back. So that's going to be one side of the picture we're going to be working with. The other side is the last sentence. The application of law, justice, falls within the province of the Paradise Trinity. And remember when we did this section, you'll see the title of the section, and is carried on out by certain sons of the Trinity, those stationary sons of the Trinity. I remember the universal censors. Okay, so see what we have there? I mean, you have a source and a transmission, but then the God of action, the spirit point, reaches out with the law, just like he reaches, you know, the conjoint actor reaches out with the love. The infinite spirit reaches out with the law and meets, coming from the other side, the paradise trinity. There's our fundamental dual phenomenon that we've been seeing over and over and over again. Or, you know, when just recently looking at it in this context of law and justice, where the infinite spirit meets the paradise trinity. Hammer meets anvil. Okay? So where we're contemplating that point, that impact point. So on the one hand, you have promulgation and interpretation tied to the infinite spirit. I'm throwing in infinite spirit because, you know, like I said, we're kind of, you know, the third source and center, kind of impersonal, second first source and center, second source and center, you know, not the universal Father, the eternal Son, conjoint actor. So the infinite spirit, promulgation and interpretation, the paradise trinity, application. Those two are coming together. That's what we're looking for. Okay, so now back to paper 25. So with your spiritual eye, if you're flipping through the pages of the book and you glance at this page and see technical advisors, you know, what a yawner for your spiritual consciousness. You know, you keep flipping pages. The revelation is here to try to get us to recognize that that is a most unfortunate tendency. That is the emergency that brought this revelation to your lap. That the spiritual consciousness, the spiritual eye, wants to flip past this section. This is a very important section to get the balance. You know, to encourage you to open the other eye and bring the two images together into a harmony. And just in the title, when you say technical, you know, you think, where's my tweezers? You know, or, you know, I mean, I'm talking about some sort of very precise thing I'm going to be doing here. Maybe I need those really fine needle nose sort of tweezers even. I'm going to need to focus in and notice precise individuality in order to be technical about it. Okay. An infinite fact, like the first source and center, when it manifests details that together are called law, how many details would that be? An infinite number. You're going to, yeah, so you're going to need very fine tweezers to, you know, get a hold of all the, you know, the minute details that total up to the individuality footprint, the law footprint of an infinite fact. Okay? So that's where we're heading. Now that they got your attention with especially the divine executioners, those guys that at the very least are just sort of quietly walking around with that scythe in their hands, quote unquote. just saying, you know, they're just a little reminder. Don't forget there's law. And those who, you know, execute it. What role do these beings play? What message do they bring? Remember, these are the messenger hosts of space, remember, that we're reading about here. You know, we saw that the message that the universal conciliators can bring can be, like I said, can be quite a stark message. What message do they bring? Okay, yeah.
They're like the attorneys.
Well, we'll see. In a way, but exactly how does that fit in? You know, from the opening sentence, you can see things along that line. But is it really about court proceedings? Remember, we read a lot about court proceedings, and we were going through those, you know, those Trinity-related beings. Yeah, if you remember, it's like, well, that was a lot of different things about different beings in different positions in a court setting. I mean, maybe this is something a little different than that. Yeah, Maybe we've already got that covered, that real, you know, both sides of the court setting, the courts on high. All right, so let's see what we got here. Technical advisors.
Section 4, technical advisors. These legal and technical minds of the spirit world were not created as such. From the early Supernifim and Omnifim, 1 million of the most orderly minds were chosen by the infinite spirit as the nucleus of this vast and versatile group. And ever since that far distant time, actual experience in the application of the laws of perfection to the plans of evolutionary creation has been required of all who aspire to become technical advisors.
Okay, so like we said, sure enough, you know, who are the beings, who's behind the beings that are being put forward here? The infinite spirit, kicking the process off here, you know, as a downstep, in a sense, expression of the initiator. You know, in other words, it's an existential deity phenomenon that's kicking things off here. And, you know, especially at the very beginning, you know, literally before there is experience, you can't have any experience. So you have to just take some initial, existential beings, or you know, beings that basically just embody their existential beginning, and put them out there. But the infinite spirit sifts through that initial group and finds... what ones? The most orderly minds amongst them. You know? So, you know, say when the infinite spirit is making, some of the Supernifim, for instance. You know, they're not all identical mindily. Just like we aren't all born equal mindily. They aren't born equal either. They're created equal. They're not born equal. Even very, very high beings are not born equal. So, yeah, we certainly aren't going to be. But there's some of them that really have an acute sense of being able to zero in on the precise little details. So they get selected to start this process off. And you say, okay, and ever since that far distant time, actual experience... So I have existential meeting experiential, actual experience in the what? Application. Right? So there's a promulgation that's heading out, and it's coming up experientially against what's coming from the Paradise Trinity. Mm-hmm. Application. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like so. So, you know, just the application of law on the one side, the promulgation and interpretation of law on the other side. Okay, so it's right there already. All right, well, that's the next little bit there.
The technical advisors are recruited from the ranks of the following personality orders. 1, the Supernifim. 2, the Sakonifim. 3, the Tertiafim. 4, the Omnifim. 5, the Seraphim. 6, certain types of ascending mortals. 7, certain types of ascending midwayers. At the present time, not counting the mortals and midwayers, who are all of transient attachments, the number of technical advisors registered on Uversa and operating in Norventon is slightly in excess of 61 trillion.
Okay. So, goodly number. And, you know, right away you're seeing that those numbers 6 and 7 with the ascending mortals and midwayers are transient members, and whatever the heck they're going to describe here going forward. So just, I mean, do you see something already just in that list? So you have this hierarchical, basically, list of angels coming down, and instead of getting number 6 cherubim, number 7 unrevealed lower order of angels, you know, those two lower orders... mortals and midwayers are in there instead. Yeah, so you're already suspecting that they're probably going to explain at some point that yeah, cherubim in that unrevealed lower order are not potential candidates for this this group of technical advisors. So apparently they're too low, too down there in relationship to, you know, individuality, sort of in its crudest form, if you will. I mean, in order to do this job, I mean, yeah, you have to be able to focus in on the details, but you have to be able to stay anchored in unity in the big picture. Remember how big a role the description, you know, the relationship to unity played when they were describing those beings in the court scenes and stuff. You know, that unity was a spiritual consciousness was a very big element in that description. So if you're too removed from innate unity nature, get too far down in the hierarchy of the angels, and you know, you're just not going to be able to have a grip on both sides. So that appears to be what's between the lines. Now let's see what, give us some details here.
Technical advisors frequently function as individuals, but are organized for service and maintain common headquarters on the spheres of assignment in groups of seven. In each group, at least five must be of permanent status, while two may be of temporary association. Ascending mortals and ascending midway creatures serve on these advisory commissions while pursuing the paradise ascent, but they do not enter the regular courses of training for technical advisors, nor do they ever become permanent members of the order.
Okay, that's all pretty straightforward, but just let me insert, as a general rule, keep in mind that you know, a lot of times when you're reading throughout the Revelation, they'll use a word an adjective like that, permanent members, or they'll say that such and so is forever. Okay, I mean there's an asterisk next to that they aren't stating that you should recognize. I mean we don't mean permanent in the eternity sense. Okay. And we don't mean forever in the eternity sense. You know, a lot of times when they do that, they mean, you know, permanent or forever, quote unquote, until the end of the finite age.
Right.
Okay. Permanent and forever as far as any finite being, like all the authors, can see, you know, and beyond where they can see be dragons, you know, beyond that point, no one knows what happens with everything. So, you know, that's what, you know, they mean by permanent. And sometimes it's even, you know, the use of the word permanent is even more circumscribed than that. You know, they'll call, you know, say a midway or a permanent inhabitant. It's like, well, you know, I mean, that's just until you get the light in life or something like that. And, you know, and then off they go. So, you know, just keep in mind, you know, that not to over interpret those words. Keep the context in play.
Those mortals and midwayers who serve transiently with the advisors are chosen for such work because of their experience in the
their expertness,
thank you, in the concept of universal law and supreme justice. As you journey toward your paradise goal, constantly acquiring added knowledge and enhanced skill, you are continuously afforded the opportunity to give out to others the wisdom and experience you have already accumulated. All the way into Havona, you enact the role of a pupil teacher. You will work your way through the ascending levels of this vast experiential university by imparting to those just below you the newfound knowledge of your advancing career. In the universal regime, you are not reckoned as having possessed yourself of knowledge and truth until you have demonstrated your ability and your willingness to impart this knowledge and truth to others.
Okay, and that's a huge paragraph, and I'm sure a lot of you remember that. There's some off-quoted lines in there. Let's just notice one little technical point. So they're chosen for such work because of their expertness in the concept of universal law and supreme justice. Flip to the end. Who's the author of this paper? Sponsored by one high in authority from Uversa. Remember when we went through the mighty messengers, those high in authority and those without name and number? You remember why they were called one high in authority? Because they had, they were experts at just this sort of, you know, in governing and administration and, you know, right? All right, so he knows of that which he speaks, and he's talking about that. All right, now this really, you know, intriguing passage here about, you know, basically the educational regime, how this works during your whole ascension career. Okay, so notice first of all how they describe each of us as ascenders. All the way into Havona, you enact the role of a pupil teacher. Not teacher pupil, pupil teacher. So teacher is the foundation. Pupil is built upon that foundation. In other words, you can't really become a pupil in the eyes of the universe until you are first a teacher. You know, until you achieve that initial ability, and you know, notice how they, you know, demonstrated your ability and your willingness. Until you've achieved that first measure of ability and willingness to teach those who are just immediately below you coming up, you aren't actually learning in the way that really results in an immutable acquirement of a relationship to experiential deity. You haven't really fully gained what can be learned until what can be learned is flowing through you. Well, this is a very common thing, like with love. It's a universe of motion. Things dynamic. If you're gonna have a relationship to it, you have to have a relationship to a flow. It has to be going through you, from the cosmos, through you, to others. And then and only then, you know, is it actually this dynamic thing that you can take a hold of. The real things are those dynamic things. That's what you're trying to take hold of, not some static thing that you can pour into some little, you know, cup in your brain and hold on to, you know. The cistern of knowledge sort of stuff, okay? The scholar, you know, scholarly, quote-unquote, in the, you know, simple-minded sense of that, cisterns of knowledge sense. Okay, that's not what we're looking for. Okay, so you're foundationally a teacher, and through that and upon that, you become a pupil, finally. You begin to learn what you need to learn. Okay, and then look at how they describe that. Okay, you will work your way through the ascending levels, okay, of this vast experiential university. They purposely put the level in there. So when we talk about that, the whole, you know, everything is levels as you're ascending. It's not a continuum. It's all broken up into levels. The very first set of cosmic levels that you're trying to achieve are called what? Psychic circles, right? Seven at the bottom, the psychic circle number one at the top, going up those cosmic levels. So that's an example. I mean, let's start out the ascension career, okay, with the psychic levels. We're talking about that, okay? If you're going to move up those cosmic levels, you have to do it as a pupil teacher, okay? So you're reflecting on, you know, they tell you about the psychic circles. You go, wow, I wonder what circle I'm on. Okay? Reflect on this. As you look back in your life, are you aware of definitive transitional levels, distinct levels of pupil-teacher character? I was this level of a pupil-teacher. Now I'm this level. It's like, well, I've never actually been a teacher. And that's seventh circler. Okay. This is a great, if you're going to go up those cosmic levels, you can't do it by just merely, definitively opening up your spiritual consciousness eye and fixing it upon the God of love. Okay. You have to open up both eyes, because they're cosmic levels, not spiritual levels. They're cosmic levels. You have to have that detail eye, that individuality consciousness, that material consciousness eye, open as well. And once you acquire a relationship with all the facts, to combine with that relationship to goodness, you can actually teach something. If all you have is goodness, what can you do? You can testify, can't teach, but you can testify to your relationship to goodness. So let's say you have a relationship to goodness and you feel motivated to testify to that fact. So you write a book, a religious text. For instance, let's say it's the Bible, and it has two parts to it, and they're called the Old and New Testaments, because you're testifying to your relationship to goodness. It's a religious text. It's testimony. It's not teaching. It's not real teaching. It's just testimony. Okay? It doesn't matter how definitively and magnificently you testify to goodness, you can still be a seventh circler. Some of those shining examples that you can think of, modern or even historical times, someone who's an amazing testament to the God of love, they may just be a seventh circler. That's fun, and that's what we're trying to bring in with the fifth epical revelation. Going beyond testifying to teaching. You have to have cosmic consciousness in order to teach. You can't just have this beautiful goodness that you can testify to. That doesn't actually teach. Because the truth, which is what you can learn, is a dynamic flow between fact and goodness. It isn't just somehow in goodness or in fact. It's between the two. You have to have both. This is a very, very important beginning, and it just keeps building upon this. That whole bit, repeat that. In the universal regime, you are not reckoned as having possessed yourself of knowledge and truth until you have demonstrated your ability and your willingness to impart this knowledge and truth to others. So you notice they repeated knowledge and truth. Okay. Just like the fifth epical revelation coordinated essential knowledge in the revelation of truth, okay, and ability and willingness, consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father. But what about that? See, it's not just your willingness. It's not just your testament to the God of love. It's also ability, consecration of your mind, the universal harmony of God the Mother. And if you haven't done that, you cannot have the ability. No amount of consecration of will give you that ability. You can't just have what goes out from existential deity. You have to also have what's coming from the Paradise Trinity, experiential deity. Okay. All right, so now what?
After long training and actual experience, any of the ministering spirits above the status of cherubim are permitted to receive permanent appointment as technical advisors. All candidates voluntarily enter this order of service, but having once assumed such responsibilities, they may not relinquish them. Only the Ancients of Days can transfer these advisors to other activities.
Okay. So think about that last part first. So we're talking about going out from the infant spirit, meaning Paradise Trinity. So look at these individuals. They go out, these angels go out, essentially from the infinite spirit. They volunteer, and they're put into this role as a technical advisor. And there they stay unless those whose hands they have put themselves into, they've transferred hands from the infinite spirit to the Paradise Trinity, or the, the God agents of, the Ancients of Days are Trinity origin beings and they're God. So only those who now hold them, the Ancients of Days, can release them from that. Now, just in passing, notice a little thing. It's like, now, Chris, when you said back there at the beginning, there's seven levels, and okay, I'll go with number six. You could imagine the cherubim being there, but that lesser order, I'm still not convinced there is a lesser order of angels that's below cherubim. Well, just notice the way they word this sentence. Any of the ministering spirits above the status of cherubim. Well, if all there was below seraphim was cherubim, why wouldn't they say any of the ministering spirits except cherubim? Just notice the way they worded it.
They didn't close that door.
Okay, so you see, very definitively, they just showed you what the Ancients of Days are, is the hands of the Paradise Trinity. That's what we're working on. We're working on this connection, this fundamental relationship between the Infinite Spirit and the Paradise Trinity.
The training of technical advisors begun in the Melchizedek colleges of the local universes continues to the courts of the Ancients of Days. From this super universe training, they proceed to the schools of the seven circles, located on the pilot worlds of the Havona circuits. And from the pilot worlds, they are received into the College of the Ethics of Law and the Technique of Supremacy, the Paradise Training School for the Perfecting of Technical Advisors.
Okay, several little details to notice there. You got to love it. Schools of the Seven Circles. Huh, we were just talking about the seven psychic circles. Must be a coincidence. just a little natural. Notice the Paradise Training School for the Perfecting. See, technical advisors like, oh, it's just like with me. First phase, I'm perfecting and I'm perfected. And I get to paradise. And then I go out in a second phase where I'm, working on completion. First I work on perfection, then you work on completion. They're obviously in this same twofold mode. And they get to perfection on paradise just like we do. So first, so you know what's going to be, as they start describing what happens after that perfected state on paradise, they're going to be going out and acquiring a complete relationship with experience. It's got to be the rest of the story. All right, now notice this fun little coinage here for this this school here, or this college. College of the Ethics of Law and the Technique of Supremacy. Okay. Capital S, supremacy, the functioning of deity on the supreme level, the sixth functional level of total deity. Like, for instance, the Trinity of Supremacy. functioning of the Paradise Trinity on the supreme level. So that one was immediately making me think of the Paradise Trinity. So that then the technique of supremacy. What about the ethics of law? Let's see. Now, back there, okay, so the Trinity was the application of law. That's the technique. The other one was promulgation and interpretation. The ethics of law. It's promulgated and interpreted. And interpreted. Okay. See, it's the two sides. The college of bringing those two together. What the Infinite Spirit is putting out and what the Paradise Trinity is supplying the stage, the tablet upon which experience can play out. Okay? So that's what they're doing. They're studying this fundamental relationship between the Infinite Spirit and the Paradise Trinity in regard to law and justice. Okay, see, so it all just fits together really nicely. He's like, okay, I'm understanding what's going on here. All right, so now what?
These advisors are more than legal experts. They are students and teachers of applied law. The laws of the universe applied to the lives, the laws of the universe applied to the lives and destinies of all who inhabit the vast domains of the far-flung creation. As time passes, they become the living law libraries of time and space, preventing endless trouble and needless delays by instructing the personalities of time regarding the forms and modes of procedure most acceptable to the rulers of eternity. They are able so to counsel the workers of space as to enable them to function in harmony with the requirements of paradise. They are the teachers of all creatures concerning the technique of the creators.
Okay, now this is another rich paragraph, so let's go through it step by step here. So it starts out, and they even italicize it the first time. Applied law, the laws of the universe applied to the lives. Again, very much. They've been perfected in their education process, and they're going out. And as time passes, they come into more and more relationship with experiential deity. They achieve greater and greater measures of completeness. That's what they're doing. And they become the living law libraries of time and space. All right, so yeah, there it is again, that promulgation interpretation meets application. Now, what about the stuff that's really relevant immediately to the truth that we're trying to recognize here and live? Preventing endless trouble and needless delays by instructing the personalities of time regarding the forms and modes of procedure most acceptable to the rulers of eternity. Okay, so first of all, it's very obvious. We're not just talking about mortals here. I don't even seem to be talking about mortals at all really here. We're talking about celestials on high. Okay? And they're working to prevent endless trouble and needless delays. Like we've pointed out, just because they're very high beings doesn't mean they don't have absolutely unique personalities which are absolutely in conflict by nature, with every other absolutely unique personality, requiring nothing but absolute consecration to harmony through the individuality of the whole to bring into relationship one to the other. It's true all the way up. So these beings are very handy that understand all the precision to how the universe works, the law of it all. They're motivated by the love of it all, but you've got to come into relationship with the law of it all. You have to conform. Okay? And in what way do you have to conform? Well, they're even strengthening it here. You notice it doesn't say instructing the personalities of time regarding the forms of procedure, the forms and modes of procedure most acceptable to the rulers of eternity. So first of all, just think about that last thing. Most acceptable to the rulers of eternity. God's favor. How do I come in God's favor? Well, Machiavendi Melchizedek taught me in the third epoch of Revelation that by faith alone I find favor with God. Yeah. As a child getting started. But not just for you, but for every being, there's another half to it. Okay? The full favor of God, the full three-dimensional favor of God, goes beyond mere faith. There is also this conformity, the law, not just a faith identification to the God who is love. It's this conformity to the God who is law also. And it's forms and modes. So in other words, what you have to do very supremely precisely, let's say it that way, very precisely, form. So in other words, they will tell you where you can walk and modes. And then they'll tell you how you must walk. You must walk only there, and you must walk only this way. If you walk anywhere else and in any other way, even within that, okay. If you haven't gotten up to the level where you are fused with eternity, okay, some really big, the wages of sin is death things can come into play. See previous section, previous two sections. Okay, but even if I'm thinking about myself or higher beings, even if you're say a Verondadec son. Okay, which no Verondadec son has ever, gone astray. But they're still constantly fraught with these issues of error, where they, oh my goodness, I was supposed to take a step like that, not like that. Ugh, dang it. Okay, and I just messed everything up for a million years. And everyone's going to have to now struggle through my mistake there. It's a very precise thing, the techniques. And you need these technical advisors. Walk precisely this way. When I get to Havona, I don't have to worry about that anymore. No, what did we learn when we read about the central universe? We read about Havona specifically. They talked about the economy of Havona, the laws of the house of Havona. There is only one way, only one place that you can stand to do that, and only one way that you can walk from that standing point to do that, period. Anything else is unacceptable. It's like, well, what about my free will? Yeah, what is your spiritual consciousness and its intimacy to free will? What's it feeling right now? Is it feeling boxed in? Is it feeling like it would love to hear the liberating voice of the God of liberty? Who will tell you, you don't have to walk that way and in that place. That's just a bunch of, they're just putting you through those rigors to, to brainwash you and control you. You have free will, and you're innately divine. See, this is the tension that got Lucifer and everyone who followed him into trouble. Their spiritual consciousness that does not like to be told about not only form, but then mode as well, for Pete's sake.
I'm really having trouble with you using the example of walking, because what comes to mind for me is a regiment of Chinese soldiers or German soldiers goose-stepping. It says forms and modes of procedure, not emulation.
Do you remember the word that they very often use about the educational system? The educational regime.
Yeah.
They use the word regime very personally. It's a regimen. I mean, this contrast between true and false liberty. It's this distinct stumbling block. And the lower you are in the hierarchy of things, the easier it is to stumble, because we know, all of us know, abuses of regimen by false absolutes. You know, world leaders that call themselves supreme leaders, for Pete's sake. Like, really, yeah. Like they're functioning at the, you know, with a capital S supremacy. yeah. You know, but they call themselves supreme leaders. They presume that they're supreme leaders, and they demand, you know, if you don't, do the jackboot routine exactly precisely, you know, they slit your throat. The challenge is, and that's why I said, I mean, you have to have a lot of courage to be here, because the courage point was two sections back. Do you have the courage to face that not in that clueless, immature, arbitrary sense of earthly supreme leaders, but in a true, pure, good sense? It's worse than supreme. It's worse than ultimate. It's absolute. There's absolutely only one way to do things right. And you have the free will to not do it your way. You have the free will to choose to do it his way or not. That's what you have free will over. Nothing else. Remember, it's a binary thing. Free will is a binary decision. It's not a multiple decision. There's only two choices that your free will has open to it: eternity and oblivion. It's his way or no way. He is law, and he's absolute. That's it. And that, can you love that? Can you love absolute law? That's the challenge. It's never been more clearly put before us, you know, until now with the fifth epical revelation. That's the challenge. That's why it doesn't just say independent cosmic thinking. It says courageous and independent, because it takes courage to open the other eye, especially if you've really fully, like I said, they did, gotten you to really open your spiritual eye so that you see the God of love, like, you know, through the muddled last 2,000 years, you just couldn't sort of mine that out of the fourth epical revelation, you know, dribbles and drabs. I mean, you now see it clearly, the God of love. So it's going to be all the starker when you open up the other eye, like they're encouraging you to do. It's going to be so contrasting. It's going to immediately invoke images of lockstep, you know, goose-stepping. Those guys always make their soldiers goose-step. You know, you probably noticed that. Doesn't matter what ethnic group they are. See, they're falsely tuning into this fact. You know, they're saying, I am the absolute. I make you walk this way and here.
To be acceptable.
Right, to be acceptable in my sight. Now, if you want favor with your God, the supreme leader, it's a false liberty. See, that's why it's a false thing. Because there's a threat of potential truth in it that's been turned to falsehood.
These laws that we need to accept, aren't they also the laws of nature, the laws of the way mm-hmm. gravity works, and mm-hmm. magnetism,
yep.
and chemical elements, and the fact that water evaporates and then it freezes. And I mean, yep. these are all the laws that we're talking about, too. We're not just right. talking about interrelationships, and you can
sure.
I mean, yeah. We're talking about all of nature.
Yes, we are. And that's why it was...
Science.
Yeah, and that's why it was very important. You know, when it went from he is law, it said the administration of spiritual law, and here is in the second source and center. I mean, all energy has law. Spirit energy, mind energy, material energy, all energy is governed by law, by pattern. You know, the absolute of pattern is just that, the absolute of pattern.
And so from that standpoint, we can understand why it's got to be one way throughout the entire universe, because we can't have some little group over here trying to figure out a different way for water to work out.
Right. Anymore, and it's the same, and see, to think of spirit substance the exact same way. There isn't any other form of spirit that is lasting. Any other form is an illusion.
Right.
It's not related ultimately, you know, transcendently to the infinite upholder. It's not upheld. Who else is on that supreme level of functioning, the supremacy of deity? The infinite upholder. Right? And of course, all the upholders that come down is an expression of that. Right? See, that's they're trying to get you to recognize that we for quite a while now, we've kind of started to wrap our minds around material law. There's a lot of religionists that still want to deny it, you know, and have a very magical worldview. But, you know, a number of even religionists are starting to come to terms, okay, gravity is just gravity. I can't do anything about it. It's just the way it is. Oxygen molecules are oxygen molecules. You know, there isn't a 15 and a half element. You know, there's a 15 and a 16. There's nothing in between. Even if you want one in between, no, there is nothing in between. It's the law. that spirit is the same way. It's to begin to put the law and the love together, to love the law, because the love and the law are the same thing. They're God the Father. He is law and he is love. It's the same thing. There is no difference between law and love. They're the same thing. It's just what you call it when you look at it with the two different eyes, but it's actually only one thing. Remember, he's prior to the split into the aisle and the sun.
Yeah.
Law and love in him are one and the same thing, just seen with two different eyes. It's the exact same thing. It's not something with two sides even. It's just one thing. Seen with two eyes.
The law is life itself, not the rules of its conduct. Yes. That's an attempt to unify that.
Right. Yep. Well, so much of the will issue and so much of what we're learning about, to me, is not terribly complex. For me, anyway, maybe I'm just a little more simple. But the mantra that the greatest gift you can give to God is to not my will, but your will be done. That sort of sums it all up. It's his will. If it's his will,
remember, take it a step further, though, remember.
It is my will.
That your will be done. See? Positive, not negative. Right.
You need to step.
Right. It is my will that I walk there that way.
So that sort of sums it up.
And why is it my will that I walk there that way? Because I know that that's absolutely the best thing for me. If I walk any even slightly different, it's worse for me. It's not an assault on me. It's what's absolutely best for me. Yeah?
I've got a comment here from Barbara. She said, the habit of God is law. He always does things in the best way.
Mm-hmm.
The one way that is best, that is what I want to do, to be like God and do things the best way.
Right. That's it. Like it is. See, that's the recognition that you come to. Stop seeing it as a foreign potentate imposing some arbitrary rule. It's like, no, it's what's absolutely best for you. If you try to do something else, it will hurt. I love you. I don't want you to hurt. Do it exactly as I say, and it won't hurt. Well, you're not the boss of me.
At least pain avoidance.
But God won't be mocked. Okay, and the The universal conciliators are the embodiment of that fact. He will not be mocked. The wages of sin is death, period. If you don't do it his way, then you don't exist. There is only one way to exist.
It becomes very curious then to think about the legions of beings that are created to marshal all of those of us with free will into the right channels. What use in the end are all of us to the administration of all that is? I mean, it's just getting a bunch of free will beings to be exactly as if we had been created perfect to begin with.
No, see, that's the thing. Because there's two types of deity.
Experiential and existential.
See, because there's two types, what you're saying is not correct. If there was only one type of deity, then what you're saying would be correct. But see, what we're doing is what he can't do. What you are becoming is what God the Father cannot be, is not, will never be. You will be the embodiment of experiential perfection and completion. He has not the tiniest measure of that. He's none of that. And you eventually will be a co-absoluteness of all of that. You're part of the I am that he's not. Okay? And it's like, yes, from our perspective, it's like, okay, that just seems like a difference in name only. But it's because we don't appreciate the quality difference. When we get higher up, we'll be able to put that which is purely existential next to that which is experiential and go, whoa, those don't overlap at all. I just thought it was just some bizarre other way to make a Havona native. No, we don't just end up being indistinguishable from a Havona native. We're completely distinct so that there's a full-on super-additive consequence of the relationship between the two.
Those guys trinitize every time.
Yeah, and then those two can trinitize.
Yeah. Okay. I mean that's what the revelation is trying to teach us is that, like we were saying, the whole key to understanding who you are and why this life and all the lives after this exist, is because it's about experiential deity, not existential. The limit that it immediately involves the existential is where this God of action pokes his finger in, the infinite spirit, and touches the paradise trinity. And we and everything else and universe, you know, galaxies come in, are born between the two fingers. Yeah. Worlds are spun up between their two fingers. Okay, that's where we are. That existential stuff is outside. We're bringing it, it's another way of creating.
The tail end of that sentence, the procedures most acceptable to the rulers of eternity.
Mm-hmm.
Not the rulers of infinity. That, I mean, it's coming from the
right. Well, I mean,
Trinity is coming from the eternity side.
Right. I mean, it all depends. I mean, you know, I mean, the three persons exist in eternity. I mean, you got to remember, we use eternity two different ways. We use it existentially and we use it experientially. Here, I mean, you know, they're basically tying you back to the three persons, those rulers on paradise in eternity. Okay. Nonetheless, let's see, there was a thought that was just, what was it, that last thing we just, I lost my train of thought there.
You had the fingers.
All right. Okay, well, anyway, maybe I'll come back to it.
Steve.
Okay, so, there's still more in here that I want you to see. This is a really big paragraph. They're able, so to counsel the workers of space, to enable them to function in harmony. See, of course, there you see that consecration to the universal harmony.
Yeah.
Okay, function in harmony. Okay, and look at how they word this. Function in harmony with the requirements of paradise. Okay, so you don't have to turn here, but I'm gonna go up to, it's paper 104, isn't it? Yeah, paper 104. That's the Triunity Strategies paper. There's a very important, again, missed because only the spiritual eye is open in the reader, block of paragraphs when you're talking about the second triunity. You notice the first triunity, you forget the, what was the second triunity? I don't even remember. Because you had that eye closed, you couldn't see it. It's very important stuff in there. Let me just give you a little chunk out of that. In that second triunity block, it lists the three, the association of the three. Then there's a immediately following paragraph, and then the one after that, it says, this is page 1148 if you're looking in a single column. In religious experience, see, so right up front, see the parent or the parenthetical, the prepositional phrase. So with that spiritual consciousness eye, in religious experience, creatures make contact with the God who is love. Yep, just like we've been talking about. But, that's the part, but such spiritual insight, it's like, well, wait a minute, that's the sixth level of meaning and the third cosmic intuition. No, but such spiritual insight must never eclipse the intelligent recognition of the universe fact of the pattern which is paradise. Okay, it said, harmony with the requirements of paradise, be it the paradise isle or the paradise trinity. Together, they are the requirements of paradise. Okay. If you notice how many times they say must in this book, it's everywhere. Okay, I mean, because that's about the emergency. Okay, if you ignore the mustness of those sentences, there's problems. Okay, must never eclipse. These have to be on an equal par. It's like, well, I mean, I know lots of people. You say, who all they have is their spiritual consciousness, I can tell. I mean, I'm thinking about that now since you're talking about it, Chris. It's like, okay. I mean, all they have is their spiritual consciousness, and they have that eye fixated on the God who is love, and everything appears to be fine, Chris. Yeah, over what span of time have you observed this? Your lifetime? Well, that's long enough. That's everything. No. we all know how Adam and Eve stumbled over that thought that, if it doesn't happen in 100 years, if it doesn't happen in a human lifetime, it's not going to happen. It appears to be, everything appears to be going well with just that eye, consecrated to the God of love. Initially. But if you follow that forward, it will become manifest in short order in the universe scale of things that all is not well with just that one eye. Matter of fact, it goes exponentially poorly, more and more poorly. It leads to only one place. If you have only that one eye open, it leads to only one place, oblivion. Iniquity. That eye, if you only have the eye, it starts out, it's like, well, how could there be anything wrong? I've got my eye on God. No, you have your eye on half of God, not the whole of God. You need to be wholehearted. Partial doesn't work.
Unavailing.
Oblivion. Okay? If you start out very innocently and seeming it seems to be well, with that love, it doesn't stay with the God of love. It slowly and inexorably turns around to self-love and self-righteousness in the end. The love won't stay in the right orientation without the law. If you just let it be free, like the God of liberty said it should be, okay, material gravity will spin the needle around like this. It'll point at you. Because you don't have enough spirit gravity, the law of spirit gravity in play to hold the needle that way. All you got is material gravity, the law, okay, and it'll point to you. You'll be one of the children of self-love, as Jesus said. You know, that is just so not understood, and it's led to an emergency. Because we have enough spiritual consciousness now to be really, really getting into this God of love thing, not knowing that it's to your own destruction without the God of law in harmony with it. That which can save you can also destroy you. It's a double-edged sword. The fifth epical revelation, see, is about the rest of the story. If you want to be in wholehearted favor, you need a twofold consecration, the law and the love, the precision and the beauty, if you will. You know, the facts and the beauty. And so, we won't go into it, but I mean, that whole section there is actually talking about this. Failure to recognize some of the things right there about the second triunity have led to very, very unfortunate things being encoded in the current history of the movement.
Chris?
Yep.
How do you interpret when it says the intellectual recognition of the universal fact of the pattern, which is paradise?
Right,
the pattern of paradise, but you're talking about law.
Right. And this, you just set it up. I was just going to make that one last little point. You know, so you see that. They're one and the same thing. It's like, well, how? Well, remember we've talked about, you know, it comes from these first two triunities that you start to talk about this, that you have two types of pattern because you have two substances. You have spirit substance and material substance. Okay? And both of them can be purposed. Both of them can be patterned. There's spirit pattern that purposes spirit substance. We call spirit pattern personality. There's energy pattern, you know, that patterns, you know, that physical substance, physical energy. Energy pattern we just call pattern for short. So we talk about pattern personality, personality pattern. You know, those are the two words. Yeah. But technically we mean spirit pattern and energy pattern, the two patterns. They come from two different places? No. They come from the first source and center, which is not split into two parts. He doesn't have two reservoirs of pattern. There's only one reservoir of pattern. Yeah, he's prior to the division, you know, into the aisle and the sun. See, so actually, spirit pattern and energy pattern are the same thing. They're the same pattern. The law and the love are the same thing at the highest level. It's just we experience them as polar opposites. That's because we're so lowly and our experiential abilities are so crude. Okay, but remember what they say, you get to the paradise and you know, you'll poke the substance of the eternal sun, you'll poke the substance of the eternal isle, and you go, well, that's a difference in name only. No, they're the same. Okay, that's what you have to recognize when you go to those highest levels. See, so, yeah, I mean, this is the pattern You know, the Isle of Paradise is the absolute pattern. But see, I'm trying to get you to recognize, you know, that we have, you know, like I pointed out on the chart, on the infinite eternal ellipse, I've got two things in that first functional level there, the Paradise Trinity and the Paradise Isle, and I purposely said the Paradise Isle rather than the Isle of Paradise, so that you could, I mean, the same adjective, there's this paradise, okay, this pattern, this law, you know, the Paradise Trinity Justice Administration, the pattern of the aisle, this is one and the same thing, and that's why they worded that, you know, why they said the requirements of paradise, that's why they said it. They didn't say the requirements of the paradise persons, or they just said paradise-y.
In a way, this is part of the fifth epical revelation, is to introduce the idea to human beings that it's not just one or the other, that to be a truly religious thinker, mm-hmm. you need to include matter into your universe view. And mm-hmm. so often on this planet, it's just been spiritualism and denial of matter. There's like some airy-fairy other dimension, and the entire material universe will disappear as soon as I die. No. Mm-hmm. And that's
all beings are domiciled on material abodes.
Exactly. And that's a massive revelation
it is.
To those of us on this planet who have always thought that religion and spirituality just involved some other dimension that didn't include matter.
Yeah. See, merely spirituality does just involve spirit substance. But religion, true religion, is part of the threefold actuality with unity. I mean, if you want to put the eye of goodness and the eye of fact, the unity eye and the individuality eye together, what do you need? Religion won't do it. That's half the foundation. Science won't do it. That's the other half of the foundation. What do you need? You need philosophy. It's like, well, where do I find that? The first philosophic text that's been given to us from on high that shows you how to use both eyes and how to work on bringing them together into a stereoscopic three-dimensional image that can be wholehearted, that will actually resonate with the whole temple within. Something that isn't a threefold actuality with unity doesn't resonate with the whole temple within. So the adjuster can't grab a hold of anything, can't make soul out of anything. It has no survival value. You know, the merely spiritual. But the truly religious does. And the truly scientific does.
Truly.
Truly scientific. Because in the end, at the highest level, in the first source and center, the fact, the goodness, and the truth are all one. He's the infinite one. Not the infinite three. Okay? He's the infinite one. He encompasses that, you know? That triunity. All right. That's the fifth epical revelation. This amazingly dynamic picture. But see, it takes courage to get into this because you've got to open that material eye. And, you know, just like your spiritual consciousness, when it definitively opens its eye with the absolute facet of the personality, can see the absolute love of the Father, guess what your material eye, through the absolute facet of your personality, will see? The absolute law of the Father. Okay. You got to have courage to look at absolute law, because it's a pattern with no options. Okay, it's just one way.
Chris.
Yep.
You must have been this way before, because I have written in the top of this page. Cosmic way is to weave together material and spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
been that way for a long time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we used to do the finger thing a lot, remember? We'd weave the two together. Right.
Associative domain.
Make warp and woof, make soul. I see, you know, the soul has, you know, you can't make it out of one set of fibers. Okay. All right, see, so all of this, he brings in these very important little snips, and they're those spots that your spiritual eye doesn't remember. It doesn't remember those paragraphs after they introduce the first, or the second triunity. It doesn't remember that. And it's sad, sad to record that it doesn't remember it, because it leads to immediate problems, especially in interpreting the revelation. If you don't have both eyes open, you immediately fall into the dichotomy. Spirit good, matter bad.
Or non-existent.
Matter whatever, yeah. you know, and you try to rationalize that that there's this fundamental dual, quote-unquote, universe where on one side is perfect and on the other side is imperfect. No. Imperfect is the absence of something. Okay? You have a relationship, you have to have two somethings. What are they? Perfect and perfecting, not imperfect. Yeah. okay. All right, I think we've laid the foundation there.
Such a living library of applied law could not be created. Such beings must be evolved by actual experience. The infinite deities are existential, hence are compensated for lack of experience. They know all even before they experience all, but they do not impart this non-experiential knowledge to their subordinate creatures.
Okay, short paragraph, but I just remembered what that little thing I was going to throw in was. I knew it had a place again somewhere here. Such a living library of applied law could not be created. God can't make square circles. Okay? The existential deity cannot make this stuff. No matter how infinite he is, he cannot do this. Only the Paradise Trinity and experiential deity can create this. And what do we call this kind of creation? Evolution is creativity in time. That's what I was remembering. All right. That's the kind of creation we're talking about, the other kind of creation, the kind of creation that comes from the Paradise Trinity, not the kind of creation that comes from the first source and center. Okay? Trinity's doing, you know, with this little, you know, spark injector, remember the flash thing of the infinite spirit? It's got to spark it, but it all happens with, you know, within the presence and functioning of the Paradise Trinity. And Mother Deity, yeah, not the Father. Okay, and then such beings must be evolved by actual experience. The infinite deities are existential, and what, you know, when they say hence are compensated for lack of experience, it's like, well, if you're infinite, existential, I mean, you infinitely exist. In eternity, there's no holes and no Swiss cheese there. There's nothing that needs to be filled or added. Okay, I mean, it's complete by definition. You know, and then there's this whole bit about, you know, we've kind of talked about this before. You know, it's like, well, why don't those revelators know that? Remember how many times that we've stumbled upon that? They'll say, you know, we just don't know. It's like, well, why'd you ask someone for pizza? It's like, no, we've tried that. Mom's the word. You know, but they do not impart this non-experiential knowledge to their subordinate creatures. And you go, well, foreign potentates. withholding the keys of the kingdom from me or whatever. You know, okay. I mean, No, see, why? So ask why. Why do they not impart? We've talked about this. Because if they took that existential knowledge and stuck it inside even one little measure, what would happen?
Short circuit
the whole thing, and you would cease to exist. They can't put existential stuff inside like that.
No.
The two have to stay separated.
Right.
You know, you can't existentialize the potentially experiential at the beginning, or there won't be an experiential. The only time when the existential can meet the experiential is at the absolute end of the experiential. You know, you go through God the Supreme, God the Ultimate, and all the way to God the Absolute. Well, initially you just have the experiential part of God the Absolute, and then that last little piece grabs on at the very end. That's when existential meets experiential.
Consummator?
If the two meet before that, short-circuited. They can only meet at the absolute end.
Human beings that won't believe in evolution are sure going to be in for a shock, aren't they?
So will all those that think they believe in evolution.
Right.
Not exactly what they thought. It's creativity and time. The law and the love are one. You know, so those who try to do it all with law and those who try to do it all with love are both going to be surprised to discover that law and love are the same thing. Yeah. All right. Okay.
Does that consummator actually, is that the technical?
Right. You've got the consummator at the end, the bridge, linking those two together. When you look in the, in the ellipse, if you're thinking evolutionarily, going this way, what allowed, what started out in the forward as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 levels in a vertical column, what allowed you to take the seventh level and wrap it around and glue it to the first level here? This is the line where the seventh meets the first. Who is the glue? The consummator of universe destiny. Right. All right.
These exceedingly wise and practical beings are always closely associated with the service and work of the universal censors. The Melchizedeks are provided with an able core. The rulers of the systems, constellations, universes, and superuniverse sectors are all bountifully supplied with these technical or legal reference minds of the spiritual world. A special group act as law counselors to the life carriers, advising these sons concerning the extent of permissible departure from the established order of life propagation, and otherwise instructing them respecting their prerogatives and latitudes of function. They are the advisors of all classes of beings regarding the proper usages and techniques of all spirit world transactions, but they do not directly and personally deal with the material creatures of the realms.
Okay, so...
We jumped
it.
Tiny.
Oh, my goodness, we skipped that one.
Technical advisors.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, here, before... Oh, we can read them out of order. It's okay. I'll just talk about it. We'll go back.
Yeah. The technical advisor is going to allow the latitude.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
It's okay. I just glanced down, and those two paragraphs are the same size, and so I...
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, let's just go ahead and bring this in. We're going to think less linearly. We're going to think more holistically here about it. Okay, so so you have this whole sweep. You notice it starts out with the universal censors. We're not surprised, because you flip back to them, and it says, these unique beings are, italicized, the judgment of deity. You know, those all-seeing eyes, those, you know, like we've talked about. It's not surprising they bring up the universal sensors. You know, look at the life carriers, prerogatives and latitudes. This is how you can walk, and this is where you can walk. Right. Nothing else. Yeah. right. the forms and modes. And then, it isn't obvious. I mean, this applies, like I've been saying, in all areas. Technical advisors are needed. That last line, now that we've really stressed how much you need to learn how to use both eyes, you're going, sure would be handy if I had a technical advisor about how to use my other eye. But they do not directly and personally deal with the material creatures of the realm. Well, what's the good news?
Yeah.
Sitting in your lap. We have the handbook that you can reflect on, come into relationship with. We have what we need. How many pages are here? More than five. Lots and lots of words. Lots and lots of technical advice.
Yeah, pictures.
Lots of technical advice. Okay, about how to go about being wholehearted, two-eyed, real. It's not sad to record anymore that they do not directly and personally help us lowly mortals. Yeah, in a way they are. We're reading a whole section about them, and we're getting really clear on this through... through an understanding of them. Okay, let's go back and read that previous paragraph. Whoops.
That's the one just before the other.
That's what previous means, I think.
Technical advisors are dedicated to the work of preventing delay, facilitating progress, and counseling achievement. There is always a best and right way to do things. There is always the technique of perfection, a divine method, and these advisors know how to direct us all in the finding of this better way.
Right. So, yeah, you know, but. What was that?
Yeah, but.
Yeah, right. So, you have a way, but there's a better way. Matter of fact, there's a best way. A best and right way. See, if it's not that one best way, so that it's right, it's righteous, so that you are righteous, then you're self-righteous. Any way except the best way is self-righteousness. There's only one right way. They're just stressing it, to italicize those two words. But you notice we naturally came into that as we brought in that from up in paper 104 there. You know, it's just staring at you in the face there that, what happens if you don't follow what they said, the must that they put in there, if you don't hold those in equal favor in your mind, those two views, you'll just...
Yeah.
Tip, yeah, tip it upside down. Now you won't be balanced. Yep.
They always say that everybody's got their own way, their own path to God.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's saying like there is a best way.
Right. So the adjuster comes with that best way.
A plan.
Right.
The pattern plan.
You can see how intriguing this is when you start to think about it, how radically different you start to think about free will.
Really?
And the absolute uniqueness of personality, what that is about. Yes, your personality is absolutely unique, but there's absolutely only one way you fit into the whole. You're a puzzle piece that personality. It's a pattern. It's a puzzle piece. There's only one spot in the puzzle it goes. That absolute free will is just, do you want to be a puzzle piece or not? you don't get to choose where in the puzzle you go. if you're a puzzle piece, you only go in one spot in the puzzle. That's just the way it is. That's the way puzzles work.
And then I wanted to say that in our intensive last time, you were talking about free will as being, making the choice to do God's will. And then everything else was free assertion.
Self-assertion.
Or self-assertion.
Right, self-assertion, right. And, you have these... This problem with that self-assertion, that it can, it can go beyond that initial, literally what you manifest as a, 3-year-old, say, when you don't really have personality engaging that. It can start to get this this purposing applied to it that starts to lead it astray. Everyone is supposed to start out with immature self-assertion. But what you're supposed to be doing with the personality is mastering that self-assertion, and directing it to God. It is my will that your will be done. But if you don't recognize that, what it will unwittingly begin to do is move that self-assertion. It'll keep it on its same line that it started out with. But move it in nature from just an innocent beginning to a consecrated, ever more absolute until it's fully, you absolutize your imperfect self. I mean, you can absolutize your perfect self, but don't absolutize your imperfect self. Don't absolutize yourself before you've gotten it perfected. Very important to humbly just be perfecting. And then when you get to that end point, then bring in that existential absoluteness thing.
On this rock.
Right. When you're actually standing on the rock, okay, then do it. But don't do it before that, or it won't go well. See, and again, like you were saying, instead of thinking in dichotomy, it's like, well, I'm going to just reject all self-assertion. No, the idea is to master the self, not try to deny the self. Asceticism is not the answer. Self-denial is not the answer. Self-mastery is the answer. All right, let's see. Okay, so now that we have those two paragraphs in out of order, but... Yeah, that wasn't too bad.
Where it says the established order.
Oh, no.
We have a
chill. Why do you think they put them in the order that they did in the book?
Well, the reason that it wasn't so bad, like I said, that we didn't do them in the proper order, is I already really, really stressed the italicized things before that, see? And that's why I said, when I notice it's like, oh, okay, well, it isn't too bad.
Right. Not too much collateral damage.
So you can see they were trying to do what I did, just really get it up to full exclamation point with double italicized words and then give you that next thing.
Sure.
Yep.
We did not do it the best.
There you go. Demonstration, Gene.
Well, what a good time to do this.
Yeah.
But you can follow the truth. independent of following the order of the paragraphs.
Yeah.
Truth is truth.
Yeah.
We followed the truth.
Yeah.
All right.
Besides counseling regarding legal usages, technical advisors are equally devoted to the efficient interpretation of all laws concerning creature beings, physical, mental, and spiritual. They are available to the universal conciliators and to all others who desire to know the truth of law In other words, to know how the supremacy of deity may be depended upon to react in a given situation, having factors of an established physical, mental, and spiritual order. They even essay to elucidate the technique of the ultimate.
Yeah, they love to, you've pointed out that they love to use that verb essay, you know, to try, to attempt. You know, and it literally means to do out. You know, so they're trying to, you know, to elucidate the technique of the ultimate. They're trying to even draw that out, you know, into view. So they, you know, that's doing out in front of you instead of hidden. You know, just, you know, some of the things there, you know, it should be clear to you the what's between the lines. So, in other words, to know how the supremacy of deity will be dependent upon to react in a given situation, having factors of an established physical, mental, and spiritual order, you won't like the way the supremacy of deity reacts if you have that physical, things like that. No. You know, you say, well, what about this mix? No, you're not going to like the reaction you get to that. Don't do that. The supremacy of deity looks like the divine executioner. That's how it reacts to that.
Drop it down.
You don't want to do that. You don't want to do those things. Okay. But, you know, that's the extreme. I mean, but every gradation, you know, of a lesser significance than that. You know, it's all there, and they'll tell you, you know, how experiential deity is going to respond. You know, you got these two things meeting. It's like, oh, if I do this, there's this action, what's the reaction?
Endless trouble and needless delay.
Yeah. Notice at the beginning there. Besides counseling regarding legal usages, promulgation, technical advisors are equally devoted to the efficient interpretation.
Yep.
It's just constantly in play.
It's so precise.
Promulgation, interpretation, application. Those three things are just being repeated over and over in different ways. I think that was... as I glanced down. Yeah, did you notice that? They are available to the universal conciliators and all others who desire to know the truth of law. When you're with your spiritual eye, the first time you hear the word truth, you assume that it always has the adjective spiritual in front of it, that all there is spiritual truth. No. No. Now, it goes all the way to the other end of the spectrum, truth of law. Okay. And everything in between. Full truth is the whole picture. If you actually want to have truth, you know, it needs to be like you were saying. I mean, there has to be true science, true religion, true philosophy, the full true triunity, that cosmic form. You know, to begin to look for the truth of law in the book, as well as the truth of love.
Part of what's coming to mind for me is thinking about mad scientists in their chemistry labs, or this guy creating Frankenstein, or the atom bomb. I mean, these are violations, perhaps, of certain laws that we're messing around with that they probably are not real happy about.
Well, you know, again, I mean, we can't do anything that can really harm anything except ourselves. You know, like I said, I mean, we greatly aggrandize ourselves, you know, in contemplating nuclear weapons. You know, you take that to a science fiction mode where, you know, you take it up several notches, you know, and... you know, so-and-so mad, you know, evil person is about to flick this switch and the universe is going to wink out or something, you know. You know, and Captain Kirk sweeps in and stops him from flicking the switch. so he doesn't tear a hole in the fabric of space-time or whatever the heck, you know, the notion is. Okay. No. Okay. The Most High's rule in the kingdoms of men, for even, you know, down at that trivial level. And, you know, we have no free will handle on the important things.
Those knobs aren't part of our prerogatives.
Yeah, we just talk about the prerogatives there. And then the other thing is reflecting on relativity with this. You go, oh man, there is nothing more extreme than hydrogen bombs. Oh yeah, did you not read the previous two sections? Mm-hmm. You think a hydrogen bomb is bad? Wait till you meet a divine executioner who has been given the right to wield the spirit and physical controllers.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're afraid of a hydrogen bomb, like I said, you shouldn't be reading. You should have stopped reading almost three sections ago. Now, if you're afraid of a hydrogen bomb, if you're afraid of scientists making hydrogen bombs, okay, this book is, no.
Step away from the revelation.
Step away. Back slowly away.
That's good.
What's the point of doing a mass murder from a divine mandate? I mean, what is the point of killing people?
And again, don't blur. There's a difference between killing and murder. No one's murdering anyone. No one's murdering anyone. They may be killing them.
Don't our flesh lives have value?
But all of this is in a bigger context. I mean, it's not all about me. You know, it's like they say, what if an angel actually steps in and or get someone to step in and save me from some physical harm? Is it because it's about me? No, it has. They tell you point blank, it has absolutely nothing to do. If that actually happens, by definition, it has nothing to do with you. I mean, in that sense, you are irrelevant. This is actually for the greater good. And when things are actually for the greater good, individuals disappear. If you actually are looking at the whole, there are no parts. Okay. So, I mean, that's what I say. I mean, if you're going to think about those, you know, Most Highs and beings like that, you know, it's the greatest good for the greatest number of people for the greatest length of time. I mean, then you've got to be very humble in your understanding of yourself. I mean, it's like, what if God were to kill 1 million people every day? How many people die on this planet every day? Have you ever looked it up?
Fewer than are born.
There's a lot of people that die every day on this planet. God kills those people. He made them mortals. He kills. I mean, we all die. See, I mean, if you look at it objectively, there's no difference. But for us, subjectively, well, there's all the world of difference. I mean, if I die, I mean, that's a lot different than other people dying. I mean, that's infinitely different. I mean, come on. No. He's no respecter of persons. It's like, well, that's wonderful when you think about the God of love. God is love, and no respecter of persons. He loves me absolutely as if I was the only being in the universe. Wow, I love that no respecter of persons thing. Well, what about if you think about the no respecter of persons where God is law? Ooh, I don't like that. I don't like the no respecter of persons anymore. I don't like the one that doesn't care about whether I live or die today. Well, they're the same God. They're the same no respecter of persons.
The love applies to me and the law applies to them.
Right, there we go.
Okay. Now everything's okay.
Yeah.
the great part is that the balance remains. You know, if you're killed here, it doesn't mean that's the end of you.
you know, what you might have missed out on here will be, you know,
pick up on the other
you'll side. Pick up on the other side. You're not going to be out because of it.
Right.
It's not going to truly harm you.
Nothing of survival value is ever lost.
Except if you're a child.
But it's very important.
Why?
If you don't remember the adjective, if you just remember it as nothing of value is ever lost, you're going to totally get wrapped around the axle. Okay, lots of things of temporal value are lost. Like right now, my life at this moment in this room has value, temporal value. That can be lost. But what's within me that has real, eternal value is not lost. I mean, if I die 5 seconds from now, my soul is untouched. Even though my material life just came to an end. Nothing of survival value is ever lost. No real harm can befall you. Lots of actual harm, i.e. not fully real, harm can befall you. Like, you can be killed, even though he slay me, yet while I serve him. But no real harm can befall you. The reason no real harm can befall you, because the God of law and the God of love are one and the same thing. I mean, like we were saying, he's not schizophrenic. He can't do what you want him to do. He can't be the God of love for you and the God of law for everyone else. He can't be two separate things like that. He's fully the God of law and the God of love for you, and for you, and for you. He's no respecter of persons. Just as the love gets spread evenly around, so does the law. But boy, do those play out differently. Yep. The no respecter of persons law means that people are going to die.
Even in Golgotha.
The no respecter of persons out of love means we all have the potential of eternal life. Material death, eternal life. And he's no respecter of persons in material death, and he's no respecter of persons in eternal life. Those are the two sides.
Imagine what life will be like when it's about life.
Yeah,
right
instead
now,
of about...
life is all about death.
It's not actually about... You're not really living. Remember, I've focused on that. And what's the difference between living and really living? If you're focused on death, you're merely living. You're not really living. It's impossible to be really living. Okay? Until you fear not, you can't really live. Okay? It's just a temporal thing. There's no eternal nature to it. You're not really living.
Get back up in the tree with your fur.
But people are looking for life in a near-death experience,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's
humor.
Or that line I often say, doctor, can you keep me from dying? No, but I can help you to live. Now, the revelation can't keep you from dying, but it can help you to live, really live. You can start it now. Now, a real living philosophy, that guides you through the truth in your walk of life. That's what you're looking for.
Technical advisors are selected and tested beings. I have never known one of them to go astray. We have no records on Eversa of their ever having been adjudged. In contempt of the divine laws, they so effectively interpret and so eloquently expound. There is no known limit to the domain of their service. Neither has any been placed upon their progress. They continue as advisors even to the portals of paradise. The whole universe of law and experience is open to them.
Okay, yeah. That completion phase, neither has any been placed upon their progress. They continue to progress after that perfection, just like you'll continue to progress after your perfection. And just the last paragraph they couldn't resist. They had to do it again. What do you have there? You have adjudged in contempt of the divine laws they so effectively interpret and so eloquently expound. Interpretation and promulgation. Yeah. There it is again. But we see now, you know, that even though they're stressing that what they come out with from the infinite spirit, the thing that makes it makes them living law libraries, you know, like they described, is when they bring that existential promulgation and interpretation into relationship with the Paradise Trinity, with experiential deity, with application. And together, now they're really living. And that's, see, it's that, to come into relationship with the Paradise Trinity is what we were just talking about, makes you really living. I mean, how do you become really living if you choose to consecrate your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother, to engage the three cosmic intuitions and the Holy Spirit that come from the Mother, so that you're really living? Not just living in the lower domain of the hourglass. You're really living. You're in the upper domain of the hourglass, which is wholly formed by her. Okay? It's her capacity that you seek so that you can really live. And so, no matter how dry the section title might seem, matter of fact, it's pretty likely that if it seems really dry, the greatest truths that you actually need are there, if you can find them. But of course, they're the hardest ones for you to find, because they're the least familiar, right? I mean, you're looking for that through effort, struggle. You're looking for the conflict. Those areas of truth that you are not yet familiar with. That's what you need. You don't need affirmation in the truth that you already have. You need the rest of the truth. And most likely, you know, if you have any inclination to be reading this book in the first place, it's because you start out on the spiritual side. There's very few people who have picked up this book that started out, you know, on the fact side, you know, the science side, the pragmatic side, etc. So by and large, you know, that's the challenge for those who are reading this revelation right now. They have that religious impulse, that sixth adjutant, that got them going and made them willing to open this up and start studying it. But to recognize what you start discovering when you start studying it completely, you know, that it's challenging you to see your initial bias and limitation and start working on that. Get it filled out so that you can be really living. Very hard, but it is the challenge that's in front of us, and it's a challenge that not only, you know, if you take on, will not only radically reform and enrich your life, but it's what the world needs. You know, it's what the world is so desperately in need of, is some cosmic citizens who can reform the sectors of society that are slipping, you know, very, very radically now.
Understatement.
It's unraveling ever more rapidly. I mean, if anyone has been thinking in the last 30 years, you can see that the slope is changing. Okay?
Acceleration.
Right. There is an acceleration. That's going on. So it's an emergency situation. And, I mean, it's very unlikely that anything is going to slam into the wall while we're still alive. We're so here today and gone tomorrow. But you know, going beyond the span of my life, the world needs to be seeded with a growing recognition of the cosmic consciousness that can only be found through this. You can't just say, I want to be philosophic. Because you don't have motive consciousness. You have to have revelation in order to actually achieve that desire. It's the only way to do it. All right. Well, that one section certainly filled out the time, didn't it? All right. Well, we'll pick up on the rest of these individuals next time here. Let's take a moment and reflect on this.